is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
He's always lurking, obviously. He's one of the best players in the league, so we know that. We knew that coming in, and you got to give him a lot of respect. And he's always dangerous no matter where he is on the ice. So they played a strong game, and they like I said, they're fighting for their lives, and that's what you have to expect when a team has their season on the line. So credit to them, and like I said, just got to move forward and start preparing right now.
Next opportunity to clinch for the Sabres comes up Friday in Game 6 in Boston. Not going to lie, really like David Pasternak's first career overtime goal a lot better than his second. Welcome in to Sabres Live.
Yeah, that was...
Game 7 against Toronto.
Yeah, that was a much better overtime goal by Pasta. Here's the thing. We pointed out, you know, in game one and two, how Pasternak and Arvidsson and Geeky, they like to cherry pick. They like to take chance. And I feel like Boston is hoping that those chances will come, right? If the Sabres mismanage the puck or whatever. Sabres did a fantastic job all game managing the puck, not giving those situations to Boston. They had one. They had one, and it was almost a breakaway by McLeod. Like, Krebs is looking for McLeod, and... oh, it's almost there. And then it turns out Pasternak is an inch onside, and he scores a goal. I think that's what Boston is hoping for. That's what they've been hoping for pretty much all series, to get a couple of breaks like this that they're going to give them a one-goal win. And they got it on that play. Well, okay, good. But I think that the overall feeling of the game for me was that Buffalo had the better chances, Buffalo had the better looks. There were some good looks by Boston, but I feel like Boston had the better, and they were patient. They didn't rush it because Boston was playing such a conservative type of game. I just hope they would have scored maybe a couple in the first instead of just the one, maybe having a power play, maybe a chance late in the third. They didn't get it, and that's the bottom line.
I think a little bit of how you frame it and maybe how others then perceive Pasternak's style, and to your point, maybe being a bit of a cherry picker, I think that's a horribly negative connotation to a superstar player.
Yeah, because that's when you're playing in the street with your buddies and like, ah, you're a cherry picker.
I think that moment specifically last night, and this is why Lindy, I think, answered it the way he did. I think it's what makes Pasternak great is the anticipation. Sometimes the best know in their gut what is likely to happen, even if the odds are against them. And the odds were in favor, potentially, and the odds makers would tell you whether it was 55, 65, 75% in their favor, that the Sabres were poised to make a potential game-ending winning play.
Yes.
But with that comes the opportunity for it not to happen. And I think when you watch Pasternak come on the ice, there's just his reading of plays is why he's a top 10 point producer of the last decade. He is so good, and what a finish, and what emotion. And then now you flip that to... okay, how does Buffalo handle this emotion? This was a great opportunity based on never trailing in the game. Mm-hmm. And then in overtime, and this one might have been overlooked by many because it was just a continuation of a play. I don't believe any of the broadcasts really gave a proper replay look on it. But 30 seconds into overtime on a bit of a broken play, Jason Zucker has the puck come back to him. That thing has a third of the net to go into. It hits Jack Quinn's skate before Swayman would even be able to push across fully and make a game-saving save. This is unfortunate luck that Zucker thought he was going to score, only to have it go off his own player.
Yeah, Zucker said in the postgame, and when he first said that, he goes, I had a chance, and it hits the knee and instead of going in, and I'm like... and then I look back to my notes. I'm like, oh, rebound chance early in overtime.
Never even
that's
became
what he's
a
talking
rebound.
About. Well, it was a broken play and he got it. But again, like I think that what the Sabres were able to do is with Boston playing in the neutral zone the way that they did, is trying to get the pucks in deep, trying to forecheck. And to that cherry picking comment, what Boston understands that if they keep five guys in the zone, it keeps the Buffalo defense at the blue line. How did Buffalo create so many turnovers in game four? Their defense pinching. Their defense pinching. The forwards coming back, stealing the puck, going in. Well, if you pull a guy out of the zone, what is that going to do? Well, you got to respect that. Mm-hmm. So Buffalo's defense has to back out of the zone. There was no turnover, counterattack, transition goals in game five because Boston has taken that out of Buffalo's game by pulling a guy out of the zone, making the defense having to respect that back off. So what you need is you need to get a couple of speed chances, a couple of rush chances. There was no rush opportunities in the game. There was the Pasternak breakaway. That was an odd man rush, maybe one of the only one. But McLeod has speed. Zucker has net awareness. Quinn has skills. Like, right. That line can create off the rush. And that chance early in overtime was one of those where it could have gone their way.
And what also fuels what happened in game four is stacking up a couple of goals early.
Yeah.
Once it's no longer a one-goal game, the desire to play your game, which is what the Sabres talked about, getting on it, like, yeah, you're absolutely going to continue to be aggressive. Like, you have more margin for error, which increases your risk tolerance, and while everybody would want to say, oh, you play the same way, there's a reality to it that both sides feel completely different. And the longer that first period went on, the gap just got wider and wider because Buffalo just kept pushing so hard.
Yes.
And last night we talked about it after the first 10 minutes of the first period. Sabres were in great shape. But you could then see, to your point, the Bruins taking more aggressive pinches down the wall.
They looked faster.
All of a sudden, just by these 10-foot plays, it's like, no, I'm going to win this. And Boston started believing in that. But to your point, like, it didn't tilt the game ever decidedly in Boston's favor. It just kind of neutralized the game. And I think both teams were quite happy with where they ended up being at. You're always going to lament missed chances. My goodness, Peyton Krebs had... it would have been an all-timer assist in the third period
when
he button-hooked up by the blue line, got around his man, came around the net, backdoor Thompson, just misses, and you're like, holy cow. And then Krebs had another chance, I believe, either in the third or in overtime, just from a possession standpoint, where he looked like he was poised to kind of end
the game.
He
shot it over the net, maybe, on that one.
And so I love seeing that because... you still sometimes, and fittingly, it is a superstar that ends the game, but you want to see everybody that has been a part of a top five offense in the NHL this year keep believing.
Yeah.
And so to have a guy like Krebs creating in that moment, perfect. Keep going. Keep doing it. Sure. Unfortunately, his attempt in overtime ends up going the other way. That's just hockey to me.
Wasn't a bad play. It wasn't a turnover. It was he is late in the shift. Everybody's changing.
Yeah.
He sees an opportunity. I trying to get there. Missed. Like, he went over the puck and then but it's not a turnover. It's not a reckless play. It's not a stupid play. It's a play.
Mm-hmm.
It's a play that happens many times in games where you try to make a pass, it doesn't happen. Usually nothing comes out of it. Turns out pass and that gets the breakaway goal. But I feel like Boston in the first period put so much pressure on Buffalo on the walls, where Buffalo was so good in game three and four, getting the puck off the wall, boom, play to the middle, speed, and now you attack. And all of a sudden, they get the puck on the wall, boom, they have somebody in their face. The puck is stuck on the wall. There's a wall battle. It slowed the game down. That was, to me, after the Sabres took a 1-0 lead, like, if you look at the expected goals and the chances and the charts, it kind of flatlines for a little bit up until the power play in the second period, and then it goes back up. And I think that power play had some great looks. Did not score, but had some great looks. That, to me, was where Boston started to lean on Buffalo a little bit. It could have gone either way, and I really feel that same game being played 10 times, Buffalo probably wins 6 or 7 of the 10.
Yeah.
It just happened that it was one of those 3 or 4 that Boston won.
I think I agree wholeheartedly with you, except that I do know what happened in the regular season series.
Yes.
And
yes.
So the Bruins won 3 of 4 in, I think, very similar manners there. So yes and no, maybe all at the same time here. Buffalo did score on the power play. Rasmus Dahlin got one. They don't score the rest of the way with the extra man. They go 1-for-3 on the night. There have been 10 overtimes in the NHL this year. We have seen the home team win 6 times, the road team win 4. But at least from a one-goal offensive standpoint, you're probably excited that Dahlin got it, that it happened on the power play. What can this do, if anything, moving forward here for the captain?
Well, a few things. Number one, I thought their entries, the Sabres power play entries, were better.
Yep.
So that's one. Two, try to score off the rush. That was a rush goal. Like, you did not
deep into the power play.
Deep into the power play, and yep, you didn't just say, okay, let's get in, set up the power play, which I thought had some good looks. You get in, how about you attack the net, get on the rush, and that's where Dahlin scores the play. And I think for Rasmus Dahlin, he has been very good. Mm-hmm. He has been physical. He's had to defend and play a lot of minutes. He's had some good looks offensively. He's had some good one-timers from the middle of the ice. That, to me, to have him get in and get the power play goal and get him a goal, his first playoff goal ever, I think that was huge. That may be even bigger in Game 6 or in Game 7 or next round because of the way that he did it. Mm-hmm. And now telling Tage and Tuck and whoever's on the power play, because Noah Austin was on that unit, but he's not going to be in Game 6, like, let's attack off the rush. Let's try to catch him off the rush on the power play.
Drew Stafford coming up later on in the show, and more on Östlund here in a moment. Did want to just, you know, finish off the overtime discussion with this. In 2026, and as mentioned, we've seen 10 overtimes already, power plays are real. And in the extra session. So Montreal and Tampa kicked off the playoffs. There was a last-minute third period penalty, so that carries over into overtime, and it is essentially the same thing. You know, as a referee, when you're calling it in the last minute, that it's likely to carry over. So
you know, when in the last 10 minutes, that is basically an overtime penalty.
Yeah, but the point is, call it the way it should be called. In Game 2, Ottawa-Carolina, we see a penalty shot called, and Martinook gets it. In Game 3, Dallas and Minnesota, Marty, there were 4 minor penalties called in the 2 overtimes, and ultimately it ended on a power play goal after puck over the glass. This is Henry Jokiharju holding Tage Thompson seemingly forever last night in the overtime. And then Game 4 in Utah this week, Stenlund took a slashing penalty. Mammoth killed it off, but ultimately still lost the game. Penalties are real. It doesn't matter what period of the game they happen. It's part of the sport. Don't be afraid to call it. And obviously you saw Tage's reaction there after the lengthy grab, and incredibly, they still mustered an excellent chance. It was Swayman's best save of the overtime on Alex Tuck right there. Yeah. But how could it have been different if, like, the funny
if
part
Thompson
is the sequence
loose.
Starts with both arms going around Tage Thompson.
Around the net. He goes around. He's trying to get away from him and can't.
And again, this is one moment, and you can always look at it from. So I'm saying I am fine wherever, whenever, whomever gets called for infractions in overtime. It's part of the game. Ironically, we'll talk Lady Bing finalists later on.
Well, it was Jake. It's Jake on X right now. We asked basically what adjustments need to be made heading into Boston for Game 6.
Yeah.
He said adjustments from the refs would help. A heck of a lot of clutching and grabbing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they did better in Game 4. Look, again, you play the game the way that it is reffed and the way that it is presented to you. Boston saw an opportunity. They're like, hey, they're not going to call anything, right, so I'm going to hug you. I'm going to stay close to you. That's what they did in Game 2. Then there was a little bit of a change. Like, and what happened? Kastelic takes a penalty on Benson
right
behind
the
net. What did Lindy Ruff say after Game 3?
Mm-hmm.
We can't have that play by Peyton Krebs taking a penalty, punching a guy in the face and whatever after the whistle.
Uh-huh.
They're going that. So now, will there be a message for Game 6 to the supervisor, to the referees? Maybe, we'll see. But if clutching and grabbing is allowed, then clutch and grab Elias Lindholm in front of the net when the puck is bouncing. Just grab him and hold him.
Wow. That Dallas-Minnesota Game 3, there was Steele for tripping, Ben for holding, Hughes for interference, and Yurov puck over the glass delay a game. All 4 infractions in the 2 overtime period. So, again, it's real. And unfortunately, from a Sabre standpoint, injury is real to Noah Östlund.
Yeah.
The coach didn't sound hopeful last night. upon the first period lower body injury sustained by Noah. This happened along the boards in the Sabre defensive zone. He went in to forecheck and really close off Casey Mittelstadt, and he did so effectively, but then the leg buckled underneath him, and the update today certainly is that he will miss some time. And
it's still being evaluated, and there's obviously, but the weird thing is that it looked bad when he left the ice, and then he went to the locker room, came back, sat on the bench, took a little twirl during the commercial break, and then went off and basically gave it a try, and definitely felt like something was wrong. And obviously now that we know that he's going to miss some time, it's very unfortunate.
So what does this mean for game six and Norris expected to come back?
Well, the easy, logical, like, lateral move is, well, Austin took the spot of Norris in game 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. Norris was going to come back and come back into his own spot, which was occupied by Austin in game 6. Now, when talked about it this morning and asked about it, Lindy Ruff kind of, I don't want to say hinted, but left the door open as to, well, maybe there would be other changes to the lines, right? And see if they can generate more offense like they did in game 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. Because really, like, in the first two games of the series, other than the 6 minutes in game 1, there wasn't a lot of offense. And that, like, Swayman was good, but
no, but even game 3, it's a 2-1 game before the empty netter. So that's not a lot of offense.
It's not a lot of offense. But I look at it and say, could they maybe say, okay, let's keep the McLeod line together because it's always the McLeod line that has been together. Mm-hmm. But could they swap Benson and Krebs to give maybe a little bit more balance and say Krebs has played so well, let's put him with Norris and Doan, and let's put Benson with Thompson and Tuck, try to give ourselves three lines that can go. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a change on the fourth line. I don't anticipate it, but who knows? So to me, that's, it's going to be seen on Friday. I wouldn't make any changes other than Austin out, Norris takes a spot. But who knows if they mix and match some lines.
Right. There have been no goals from Quinn, Zucker, McLeod to this point in the series, which Buffalo leads 3-2. Friday at 7:30 is when Game 6 rolls around. And we, of course, will have pregame coverage right here on MSG beginning at 7. How did last night's result, and, you know, obviously if the Sabres don't close it out on Friday, there would be a reasonably quick turnaround to play Game 7 right back here on Sunday. But how did last night affect the overall outlook on this? You look at Stanley Cup odds, and, I mean, the Avalanche are still number one, and Buffalo's still sitting at plus 1,500. So while it was, you know, they could have been 3-for-3 in franchise history in closing out games on home ice in Game 5.
Yep.
It didn't happen, but they're still in a terrific position. The easiest way to look at any situation like this is exactly what happened with Minnesota and Dallas last night. Series is tied 2-2. Somebody's going to win and take a 3-2 series lead. Buffalo's in a 3-2 series lead, and you're going to take that every single time as you look across the league as everybody tries to get to that next step like Colorado and Carolina have already done.
Yeah, so when you look at the odds, I think Minnesota jumped up a little bit just because they now have a 3-2 lead on Dallas, which, but the plus 1,500, the plus 1,400, whatever kind of number you're getting at the sportsbook has been the same. Uh-huh. Before the loss or after the loss. Sabres are still in control of this series up 3-2.
Well, talk more on Minnesota, because they were obviously around the National last night and winning on the road against Dallas and doing so with some more road points from Kaprizov and Boldy, who has been so good. And even though they still have had trouble keeping the Dallas power play off the board, they find themselves where they expected to be. This is the Wild team that went all in to get Hughes and be better and get out of the first round, and now they're knocking on the door.
Well, first game for Matt Zuccarello, he had a big impact scoring the first goal of the game. You're right, Dallas power play is really good, and obviously that is the one thing that's going for Dallas, but the goals at even strength are 14-4 by Minnesota, plus 10 in 5 games. Let's just say we're starting the game, Duffer. I'm up 2-0 even strength already on you. Mm-hmm. That's what it is, plus 10 in 5 games.
So Sabres through the first 4 were similar, not that dramatic, but I believe plus 6 at 5-on-5.
Yeah, so, well, that's why the Sabres have a 3-2 lead, and that's mm-hmm. why now Minnesota has a 3-2 lead. Jesper Wallstedt has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a again last night was really good. There was some talk after, you know, the first four games, should Minnesota go to Gustafson? Nope, we're sticking with Wallstedt, and it's been great. Kaprizov, empty netters are for winners type of goal. But, yeah, I mean, and Minnesota is frustrating Dallas right now in the way that they're playing at 5-on-5. So other than the power play, Dallas doesn't have much going on at this moment.
And, of course, there was another game which highlights D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
An eruption from the Oilers in the first period's 10 minutes. There were three goals very quickly, which prompted a text from Shayna Goldman from The Athletic.
Husso
is on. And so, yeah, this was the easy prediction last week when I said I would expect to see Jari and Husso in this series in Game 5. Well, we ended up seeing Jari earlier than that, and we ended up seeing Husso last night. The Oilers made quick work of Dostal and the Ducks. The 3-0 opening series burst propelled them to a 4-1 win and pulls them back to within a game, trailing the series 3-2.
Well, the Oilers decided, let's go nuclear and put McDavid and Draisaitl together on the line. We didn't know if McDavid was going to be part of the game. He was, Game 5, and he played with Draisaitl. And it was a quick start, 3 goals in 10 minutes. The stall gets yanked. They win 4-1. That is how the Oilers are hoping to stay and continue to win games in
the
series.
The disturbing aspect of it all, 3.77 goals against for Anaheim is 15th best in these playoffs. Worsened only by Edmonton, who sits at 4.17. Yeah. So again, things that we expected. The two teams that are going to produce the most goals and thus give up the most, Anaheim and Edmonton living up to the billion.
The over-under for the Buffalo-Boston series has dropped. Usually it's 6.5 yes. before the game. It has dropped to 5.5. The over-under in the Oilers-Anaheim series has gone up to 7.5 pre-game. That's really, really weird to see.
What disturbed you from Minnesota-Dallas?
Okay, so I'm talking about Dallas being frustrated with Minnesota. Ryan Hartman is a type of player that gets under your skin. So Hartman bumped Jamie Benn. Benn goes back at him with one cross check in the arm, the second cross check in the face. So to me, if Zadorov got a $5,000 fine and no game suspension, I think this will be a game suspension for Jamie Benn. That is a cross check to the neck and face of Ryan Hartman. That should be a suspension. That is why I said Zadorov wasn't going to be suspended. He cross-checked Dahlin in the arm. If it had elevated to the head, that's a suspension. This one is going to be a suspension on Ben.
Yeah, but the problem with that whole argument is if you end up breaking somebody's arm, are you still taking that approach when it comes to discipline?
No, the injury is
a factor. I know, but
you
don't, they don't do eye for an eye. It's never been the way. Does it factor in? Yes, but it would never appease anyone if Zadorov got a game for breaking an arm of the other team's captain, who then misses the bulk of the remaining playoffs.
Somebody said that on social media to me, and I answered basically your burner account. I basically answered, look, you drive 100 miles an hour on the highway, you get a ticket. You drive 100 miles an hour on the highway and cause a fatal crash, you're going to jail. That's the difference. It's the same act.
Yeah.
The intent may have been the same, but it's the difference in what happens afterwards.
Not everything's disturbed. There was a dazzling last night right here in Buffalo.
Canadian cities, would any other market in the NHL be able to sing the Canadian anthem? And everybody said, no, no. The funny thing is that we all know that a few years back, the Canadian anthem, the words were changed from "and all thy sons come in" to "all of us come in." I heard both in the crowd. That is how it is embedded in people's brain for 50 years of listening to the anthem one way at hockey games. And then, but great job by the fans to pick it up, to be loud, and to have the Canadian anthem being spectacular.
Three in the NHL tonight, Montreal, Tampa, Pittsburgh, Philly, Utah, and Vegas. And, of course, we had a record-setting jackpot in the 50-50 last night, well over $500,000. And that leads us into a friendly reminder. Do not miss the Pet Adoption Assist 50-50 raffle that is happening here throughout April, which is rapidly closing. It's presented by Northtown Automotive. Guaranteed 10,000 jackpot. Get your tickets now at Sabres.com/50-50. Drew Stafford coming up.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Connolly digs it free and cycles it around to Stafford. Stafford's got it. Stafford works around. Stafford cuts out in front. Back and score!
The play that Stafford makes in the corner, and he doesn't get enough credit for this. He's very strong in the puck, knows how to use his body, but it begins as Buffalo gets the puck into the Islanders' zone. Connolly will make a key play also to get the puck, as Connolly is such a great stick hander. He slips away from Campoli, and here is Stafford. He out-muscles one guy and then cuts to the front of the net, and a beautiful backhand shot makes it 1-0.
That's how it's done in Game 5, 2007,
yes.
A clinching win for Buffalo that was started by the scoring of one Drew Stafford. Welcome back, Drew. How are you?
Oh, we couldn't hear you there, Drew.
Been a while.
Oh, here you go. Here you go. Big wow, a moment. So, like, RJ's call, and then Jim Lawrence is like, wow. Drew Stafford, what a goal. Did you used to listen to RJ and Lawrence when they were calling the game to see what they had to say about you?
Yeah, I actually only listened. I didn't actually play. I just wanted to wait to hear what RJ would say. That's really what got me up in the morning and motivated me the most to perform out there. So, it's crazy looking at that clip because, I mean, that was almost 20 years ago. I mean, yeah. It's just insane. I mean, and then just the fact that, you know, the boys are on the run that they're on right now and everything and they accomplished that year. And, you know, everyone's kind of talking about, you know, the days of old and the success that the organization had back in the day. So it's a pretty pretty special time back then. And it's pretty amazing to see what the team's going through right now.
And you haven't aged since that President's Trophy campaign for the Sabres.
Yeah.
So, man, it's hard to believe.
Grays in the beard a little bit, buddy.
You hide them good. You hide them well.
Definitely. Yeah. Quick update on just, you know, where life is at right now for you before we get into all the fun stuff that that happened over the course of your time, not only in Buffalo, but your entire career.
Yeah, so I've been in Minnesota now full-time for just over 5 years. When I retired, I decided to come back and plant roots here in Edina, Minnesota, and been here, like I said, for just over 5 years. It flies by, keeping busy with the kids. I got three kids. My oldest is 11, and the twins are 9, and my oldest, actually, Marty, you'll appreciate this. He's a goalie.
Yes.
Unfortunately. No, he was actually, just so inspired by you and, your journey and overall career that when he said, if there's one player I want to, model my game after, it's Marty Baron. And so, I mean, obviously I can't get in the way of greatness and I just have to let that go and, he's in it right now. So again, keeping busy with that. And then, the twins, same kind of thing. Everybody understands, with the young kids, you're kind of turned into a bit of a driver and you're all over the place. And so that's keeping me busy and get to travel a little bit and everything. But yeah, it's been good being here.
Edina, that's high school hockey. That's like where people move to Edina so their kids can play high school hockey there, right? That's one of the big powerhouse in Minnesota, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say that's what kind of separates Minnesota from a lot of other markets, the Michigans and out east and Mass are, it's they really, really emphasize, you know, playing in the association. You know, there's not a lot of tier one options here. So kids, you know, go up and play through all youth hockey all the way up through high school. And that's part of the reason why they, you know, you see all the videos of the Minnesota high school hockey tournament, how huge that is. There's not a lot of other markets in the country that do that. So Minnesota takes a lot of pride in developing kids that way. And yeah, Edina is one of the kind of a perennial contender, if you will, in that kind of world.
Is it true that you were only teammates, you two, for 23 games?
And, yes.
And you've had this pronounced impact on Drew and his family?
Yes, because Drew was at North Dakota in 05-06. He comes to Buffalo Rochester in 06-07. I got traded at the deadline, so we only played a handful of games, well, maybe 20-some games together. But obviously a big one, and people always remember the brawl here. People think that was my greatest moment. I'd like to point them out to other things that I did other than getting beat up by Ray Emery. But people remember also when Chris Neal hit Chris Drury, you were the one that jumped in there. Do you recall what went through your mind in that moment and jumping after Chris Neal?
No, not really. I didn't, you know, I'm not really known as a fighter or anything like that. I mean, obviously I'd get in some every now and then if it came to it, but really the biggest part of this was as a young guy and new to the team, you want to kind of make your mark, and there's nothing more significant you do than sticking up for your teammates and stepping up when the time's right. And obviously, Drury being, you know, not only our captain, one of our best players, and it doesn't matter who it is, who it is on the other team. You can see there getting jerseyed and thrown to the ground, just trying to survive, I guess, in a sense. But that's what you got to do as a teammate. And in that moment, it just, I don't know, you just kind of black out and go for it. And that whole game, the way the rest of the game went, that was incredible. I mean, that's probably one of my favorite memories, as a Sabre, being a part of that game, because, you know, obviously watching Marty Brown fight, I mean, you just don't get to see that opportunity every now and then.
You didn't get thrown out of the game, right? You stayed in the game after that. I got thrown out. I was eating wings and pizza watching you guys win it in a shootout.
Yeah, just crushing slabs in the locker room. I was in the penalty box. I mean, watching the whole thing, again, still trying to come down and process of what happened. And, you know, I just want to, you know, make sure obviously Drew's okay, because he got lit up there. And and then everything happened. You see, you know, Lindy getting after it, Murray and the whole thing. And then, as the game went on, I mean, then going to a shootout and getting a chance to go in the shootout again as a young guy. You know, rookie season there, trying to make a mark in an opportunity like that. And, you know, I ended up scoring and we won. And, what a game.
Incredible. The shootout winner and then Miller with his save and then batting the puck. Yeah. Like, it was just, man, just.
Yeah.
It's everything that everybody is, you know, Drew, has just latched onto again with this current team. And, like, how closely are you watching, you know, these playoffs and the Sabres, if possible?
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, I'm watching a lot more now, because, you know, Buffalo's got a soft spot for Buffalo. I mean, been through the ringer there. I mean, spent almost 10 years of my career there, and I lived through some of the best times and some of the worst times there, and to be able to see what the boys are doing now, and you know, I just can't think of another city or fan base that deserves a winner more than Buffalo. The fans there are by far the best in the league. You see that with the way the Bills have played, and they're just starving for a champion, because, I mean, that city deserves it, like I said. And so to see what the boys are doing, it's pretty special. So I'm definitely paying attention and cheering for them. So, you know, heartbreaker there last night, but yeah, they'll get it done.
Yeah, they'll get it done. Okay, so before you got to Buffalo, like, you were at North Dakota. Now, Ryan Miller and Derek Roy and some of the guys in Rochester used to be in a band a little bit, and then it carried over in Buffalo. You were a part of that. But it started at North Dakota with Zach Parise's brother. You guys had a band, and you actually were representing the old 80s hair band. Like, what? I think we have a clip of it here. Were doing some headbanging and...
Yeah.
The costume and everything. What was the inspiration behind type of performance?
These are deep cuts, Marty. Appreciate this. Still got those pants. Don't fit quite as well anymore. But, I don't know, man. We're 18 years old. What are you going to do? Good times. I grew up playing guitar and drums since I was, seven. Drums, I picked up guitar when I was about 10. So, when you're going in and growing up through high school and you get in bands and college, it kind of carried over too. So that was some fun. We had a house that was my junior year in college up at Nodak there. And the house that we had a finished basement. So sometimes we would have, the house parties or whatever, we'd whip out, the band, if you want to call it that, but I had some great times. And then, when I got to Buffalo, I mean, there's no shortage of, music connections, there and, got to meet quite a few people, outside of hockey as well that were in that space. And, music's always been a big part of my life.
Well, we didn't know what facial hair we'd be seeing today here on Sabres Live with your return. So we're going to reintroduce the audience to Fu Man Drew. Enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be surprised at how much power and finesse a modern house cat has in its paws. Fitness is very important to me, and it's something I definitely take very seriously. These exercises and this workout, might not be for everyone, but I know it works for me.
Fu Man Drew, who came up with the idea of the video and the facial hair?
Oh man, well, so that kind of all started because Minnesota was hosting the NHL draft that year, so I think either the team or somebody was going to try to do a catching up with Drew Stafford video, like, what are you doing in summer and training, and I do like the cliche kind of workout video, and whatever. And I kind of felt bad, and because I bailed on the team, whoever the production team was back then, I don't quite remember who exactly was a part of it. But so when I got back to Buffalo, I was like, all right, we gotta do something. And I was like, might as well try to do something fun with it. I can't take that stuff serious anyways, if I'm, gonna do an actual video. So, there's a lot to unpack there.
Tyler Myers in the back working out, I think, is one of the things to unpack.
No, that's not Tyler Myers. It's this weird, Czech guy. His name's Jakob. He just kept kind of creeping into the rink. And I don't know, they, kept letting him in for some reason. I think he had a rap sheet on him, but he let him get in and get a workout in. And after a while, we just kind of let him go because, we were worried for our safety. It's like you don't really want to approach the guy. I can't speak English. He's got that weird haircut. No, it was fun, man. We had a blast.
Hey, he's still in the league, that weird guy. So yes.
Yeah. No, Mizey. Jeez. Yeah. He's doing well. But no, we had a blast, the cutoff, I think it was a Gostad cutoff t-shirt, jersey, rollerblades, man, you name it. I had everything. And actually, Gostad actually got me back pretty good. The next year for Halloween, he dressed up as Fu Man Drew and showed up in rollerblades to our Halloween party in the full getup. So that was
part of the Blade Gang.
Yeah, Blade Gang. There you go. That there. Yeah, somebody take up the costume and get out there and start crashing into dummies out there. It'd be pretty funny. But no, we had.
Do you guys celebrate Festivus in Minnesota and Edina? Because That is another video, and let's listen up on the Festivus celebration that you used to have back then.
Festivus is on the 23rd. Do you feel like you're being excluded or perhaps discriminated against by the NHL?
You know, I'm hoping that it does get the respect it deserves, and you know, I'm hoping that you know, they do respect it and honor it, and possibly let us celebrate that with the day off.
Lindy, do you think the league should recognize Festivus, give players off on the 23rd?
I don't even know why you'd ask me a stupid question like that. That's ridiculous.
So for now, Stafford will continue to take the ice on his beloved holiday, air his grievance to the league, perform feats of strength against his opponents, and daydream about Festivus polls. It's a burden he's prepared to carry.
Oh, man.
Another workout video in the Festivus celebration.
Yeah, a lot of workout videos, and it's compensating for something, lack of production on the ice. At least I can do it in the weight room.
Oh, don't sell yourself short.
Nah,
I'll have my kid build you up. My kid's always dreamed to be Drew Stafford, right? That's your son, so that's good.
Yeah, total. So rock star and fake wannabe rock star and a weight room enthusiast. So that was I got to give Sylvester a shout out on that one. That was mainly his idea, because I love Seinfeld and stuff, but I think he was more of a diehard than I was. And I'd heard about Festivus and everything. I just thought it was a great idea. You know, we were talking about this earlier. We were kind of ahead of the time when it came to making kind of content like that. You know, it's everywhere now, I guess, kids that have access to social media. So for us to do kind of a skit like that, I guess, if you want to call it a skit, was a blast. And, you know, and again, shout out to, you know, Steve Monitor. You know, he's was one of my favorite humans. And for him to be a part of that, you know, every time I see that video or it gets brought up, you know, I think of him. So, you know, he was a special human, and, you know, to be able to share that with him, and, you know, Mizey's in the background there too, again. So, I think Clarky MacArthur was in that one too. And, we had a blast, man. That was some fun times.
That's
so
good.
It's a great effort and great acknowledgement of everyone involved in that. Thank you. So now, lastly, who's your pick for the Stanley Cup this year?
Oh, well, Colorado's pretty good.
Yes.
You know, they just can't deny it. They're pretty good. You know, I've been here in Minnesota and a lot of really close friends in the Wild, watching them grind through it. Mm-hmm. It's just like to have to get through Dallas and then Colorado. And it's just talk about a path that's tough, but you know, they got the team to, you know, see if they can do some damage. But yeah, Colorado's pretty good coming out of the West. I mean, Buffalo, man, I just, again, I'm so happy for the guys there. So fun to watch them play. They always had, I feel like, the team that was in there, and for whatever reason, it just weren't able to take that next step. And for now to, you know, be where they're at, it just seems like they're able to play free and go for it, you know?
Yeah. Drew,
why not?
We got to fly, and everybody loves those words of optimism and especially reflection on your time here. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thanks, boys. See ya.
Drew Stafford with us on Sabres Live. We'll wrap right after this.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game 6 in Boston on Friday. Vezina finalists have been announced. Vasilevsky, Sorokin, and Swayman. Lady Bing come out tomorrow. Our three are?
Okay, so Anze Kopitar is going to win it, and he had an uptick in penalty minutes. He went from 4 2 years ago to 10 last year. Mm-hmm. Sam Reinhart will be a finalist as well. I don't care about the third guy.
Well, Kopitar would likely win it for a fourth time. I agree. Mm-hmm. He is the incumbent, and his career is now over, so it would be fitting. I think Mark Stone deserves some acknowledgement
here. I was going to say Mark Stone, maybe.
And I think, honestly, J.G. Pageau as well with the Islanders. So those would be a couple others I would consider, certainly. Bratt with the Devils and Troy Terry with Anaheim, now that the Ducks are certainly relevant again. Yes. Patty LaFontaine had a huge game on this day for the Sabres back in 92 as Buffalo won 9-3 over Boston. Oof. Let that feeling linger moving forward as we get set for Game 6.
Yeah, and special shout-out to my brother, Matthew, whose birthday today. He's 46. Guy that scored on me, damn it.
Much younger.
Much younger. Brother. Much, much younger.
See you tomorrow on Sabres Live.